Thank you.
Hello and welcome everybody back to another episode of the Sidecar Coffee Podcast. My name is Lewis.
And I'm Caleb.
And today we have a special guest. Caleb, let's get the intro for him.
So we have someone who is a pretty big name in the coffee industry right now. We have owner of Be Bright Coffee and your US barista champion, Frank Law. You want to say hey, Frank?
Hey guys,
So
thanks for having me.
Frank Law, following a 9-year hiatus, returned to the stage in 2023 to play sixth at USBC, but he wasn't done with this. He then came back in 2024 to win the US Barista competition and then placed 14th at Worlds in Busan. Today, we actually have a coffee from Be Bright Coffee, and on their website, they have an awesome quiz to help you find your coffee. And so we took that little quiz and we ended up with a Rwanda Gitwe Sitte, with flavor notes of plum, hibiscus, toffee, and orange. And so we're gonna go in on this. And then we have
Awesome.
this in a sidecar, which if you don't know what a sidecar is, it is a espresso-based milk beverage on the and then on the side is that same espresso from that milk beverage by itself. So you can taste the comparisons of milk within espresso, and it's just a great way, we think, to taste coffee all around. So I'm going to go in with this espresso here.
Okay, so since Caleb bought this coffee, I had to go to his house to try it. So here's me trying it for the first time. All right, this is Future.
This is Future.
Future, Lewis and Caleb.
Hi.
I'm in the presence of Caleb at this current moment, and I am trying this Rwanda.
Rwanda from Be Bright Coffee, the one that you're the episode you're listening to right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dark fruits.
Dark fruits.
Plum.
Boom.
Toffee.
Ooh.
This is the espresso. It tastes like Golden Grahams. The cereal.
Oh, for real? So, if anyone wondering, I actually pulled this one on a different basket, which I know this is going to get super nerdy, but it's a precision basket. It's wider. The holes go all the way to the end of the walls of the bottom of the basket.
Milk drink tastes like blackberry cobbler. Good. Great coffee.
Oh, I do like this, bro. That's nice. Very sweet. Give me that milk.
Milk.
Ooh. That's way better.
Yeah.
Like the milk beverage.
That
It's
one.
very good. Back to you, Caleb and Lewis.
This is a cool episode.
Anything you want to say about the coffee, Frank, as we're tasting it?
Yeah.
Yeah, this coffee, this is a newer coffee for us. It's our first year working with this Rwandan coffee. It's our first time ever actually putting a Rwandan coffee on the menu. Not because like we have any issues with coffees from Rwanda. It's just we never had the opportunity to bring in coffee that we really enjoyed in this way. And so this is the first time bringing it on. It's from Gitwe Sitte. It's really bright, citrusy, a little bit of florality, nice silky body, and that's something that we really enjoyed about this coffee. And this coffee landed in our bright and lively category, which I think we can get into later.
Yeah, that is like the perfect way I think to describe this coffee too. When you said silky body, it was like, oh, that's just what hit. Like that's the thing that stuck out to me the most, just like the mouthfeel. I don't know about you, Lewis, but like I always have like Rwandan coffees always shock me every
Yeah,
single time.
100%. I think this year, though, especially the ones I've tried, have been fantastic.
Yeah, this is very good coffee. I'm like everything on the bag I'm getting. It's super citrus forward. But that toffee sweetness, it's like caramel toffee. It's super nice. And then in the milk beverage, it just complements all of that sweetness and brings it out. This is a really nice coffee. Wow.
Thank you.
And like bright and lively,
I have a
like that
question
is,
for you guys.
yeah.
The name Sidecar in relation to the drink itself, is that where did that name come from? Is that a southern kind of partnership, or how did that come about?
It's just kind of our favorite drink. We have it on a on the menu at a cafe that I still work at, that Lewis used to work at. And it's just kind of like the way that we have, instead of doing separately, like tasting espresso and then later on tasting it in a milk beverage, like we just want to see how it directly affects side by side. So yeah, I got them like in a in two glasses here, and that's the it's how we serve it.
And they're both doubles, double
Yeah,
shots or
both
double
doubles.
shots.
I think traditionally in a cafe,
Interesting.
you would split it, and do
Yeah.
one of
Okay.
the shots in the espresso and then the other shot that goes into the cortado. Yeah, we first saw it at the cafe and then just started tasting coffee like that. It was a cool way to, when getting a new coffee in, being able to see how it would change. But also, I think for us, it was a good way for us to try coffee. But I also would do it for any friends that I would bring over, and I'd be like, hey, try this. And they would always ask me for lattes and stuff. And I would make them like 6 ounce or an 8 ounce latte, but I'd be like, here's a sh the same shot of espresso I use. Try this espresso
Yeah.
first and then try your
Yeah.
milk drink. And I just think it's a really
Oh,
cool
I love
way
it.
to introduce people into coffee, because it's like they're used to that milk, and then they go into the shot of espresso like, wow. And then they go
Yeah.
back to the milk and they're like, wow, like that tastes so milky. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Well,
But
it's
it's
also a
also,
good way
yeah.
to like
That's
it enhances the flavor of the espresso throughout the milk, because I feel like a lot of people getting in are just gonna be like, oh, this tastes like hot milk and
Yes. Yeah.
coffee. And so really highlighting the espresso and then going back and like, okay, now try to pick out what's super harsh in this cup throughout this one. And then we just chose the name just because, like, I don't know, we were just goofing around one day coming up with names. And then we just thought about the drink. We're like, well, we always drink sidecars. And then I don't know, we think that the drink, each part of the drink complements each other very well. And we think we have a really good friendship. So we just kind of work very well together. So that's kind of how
Awesome.
it
I
is.
like the yeah. I like the name. I'm the reason why I'm asking is because I'm very familiar with the drink. And I love that it's called Sidecar, because I think that's a cool little name for it. The name that we have, at least on the West Coast, we call it the one in one. I'm curious if you guys have ever heard that.
No,
No.
no.
Yeah, so we do the same thing. We call it the one in one. And I gotta give a shout out to Jared Truby of Cat and Cloud.
Yeah.
He came up with this drink 10 years ago.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And he split a shot, made one with a macchiato, and then that was when the one in one was born. And then since then, it's kind of transformed to different drinks and stuff like that. But
Wow.
it's just cool to see kind of like how it's transformed over the years. And now it's like, it's having, having different names in different parts of the country. I think that's pretty cool.
That is super cool. Look at Cat and Cloud just being leaders of the industry. They're awesome. But no, yeah, it's just a fun drink, but this is not about Cat and Cloud. This is about Frank Law, the US Barista Champion of 2024 and the owner of Be Bright Coffee. So we'll get into this. Who is Frank Law?
Frank Law. I think for me, so much of my identity lately has been definitely in the coffee scene, just because of my recent winnings. But I think if I can describe myself, I am a Korean American. I'm also a believer, and I'm also married with a daughter. And I'm a husband, I'm a father, I'm a son, and I love to cook. And I happen to love coffee, and I'm pretty good at it for whatever reason. So
Just pretty good at it. Yeah, just the US Barista Champion. That's awesome. So how did you get started in coffee?
yeah, I got started in coffee in 2010. And at the time, it was still kind of right after the recession, the 2008 recession. It was really hard to find a job, really, at that time. I had just graduated from college, called a university called UC Riverside, with a degree in business and a concentration in HR management. And not really sure where I wanted to go. in terms of my career. I just started applying to a bunch of different jobs, and it was always the same thing where it was like this catch 22 where everybody was looking for experience and I didn't have any, but I wanted to work to get that experience, but nobody wanted to hire if you didn't have experience. So it was just like this at the time feeling of like, wow, like how do I enter the job market? And I just kind of grew a little bit frustrated by the process, and I decided to almost take like a gap year in a sense, where I worked somewhere with very little, very low stakes, and just work for a year and just gain experience. And I'll create a resume and I'll write a cover letter about what I learned, and then I'll start to apply for quote unquote real jobs. And that job happened to be at a small little cafe in LA called Bricks and Scones. It was like this kind of building that had bricks everywhere, and we sold scones that we made in-house, and we served at the time Intelligentsia coffee, which I had no idea what that meant. I started working there, and one of the things that my dad instilled in me early on was just the kind of this work ethic of working hard, and also just having a perspective of like, act like an owner, whatever you do, and that means that you do the things that maybe other employees might not do, might not care for, like picking up the trash that like is in the corner of the shop that nobody else is gonna, pick up. And things like that, just kind of keeping your eye out for that kind of stuff. And I took that to heart and really tried to apply myself the best that I could, even if it was just at a coffee shop. And at the time, this is 2010, we didn't have a robust coffee scene in LA. You could probably count in two hands the amount of shops that were doing really amazing coffee at the time. And so it was still very early on in the coffee scene in LA. And I just kind of started falling in love with the cafe culture. And one thing that really appealed to me is I love one of my original passions was cooking. And the thing that I loved about cooking was sharing food with people, and that joy of like being able to share that with people, seeing their response. But I realized when you work in an actual kitchen as a chef, you don't get to actually experience that. You're just in a kitchen, you're making food, it's hot, you're getting yelled at. Not a lot of space, and it was just like the opposite of what I would want. And but with the cafe, I found the joys of cooking, which is namely sharing food with people and seeing their response. I found that experience through at cafes, where you can share a coffee and they can drink it in front of you. You can see their expression, you can see their joy. So I really started to enjoy making coffee, and about 3 months in, I finally got trained to be on the espresso machine. And I just remember just wanting to only just be in front of the machine. Like that was where I just gravitated towards. I was like, I want to just make espresso, steam milk, do lots of it. And I find myself in the morning just like doing all my opening tasks as fast as I can so that I could spend as much time as I could grinding in the coffee. And to me, that was just like this
That's
special
amazing.
moment that I had.
That's amazing.
And it was like nobody else in the shop, just you and the machine. And I still love that feeling to this day. So whenever I don't have a ton of opening shifts in my own cafe, but whenever I do, I cherish it and enjoy it. But yeah, that's how I got started in the industry. Eventually moved on to help a cafe in a little Tokyo called Cafe Dosen. Was brought on as a lead barista. With 6 months of experience, I was like, yeah, I could be a lead barista. And kind of naively, with the gusto of a bright-eyed barista, told the owner James at the time that we can do some cool things. And it was cool to work for a new cafe where the owner also kind of gave you the keys to the shop a little bit, like gave you some decision power. And so that was the first time I ever experienced that. And I really enjoyed just partnering up with James and and making decisions together. Was a really cool experience for me, being like 22 or 23 at the time, just like being able to like create a menu, make quality decisions. It was really fun time. At the time, sales were just being introduced into cafes. So we were just learning about coming in and what ratios were working well and things like that. So it was a very fun time. And I got to learn a lot during those times. I call it like the times where I was like in the trenches, just like tasting espressos and making steaming milks. We would do like latte at nights. We each 5 gallon of milk and we just pour lattes all night after the shop closed. It was that kind of like, formative time of my career. And did that for about 2.5 years. And then helped start a company called Copa Vida in Pasadena. And was brought on as the manager of product quality. Eventually got to do a bunch of different positions within the company. And then worked there for 7 years. We got to open about 8 stores throughout California. We got to open about 6 in San Diego area. So got to experience how to open shops, in different cities and kind of do different bar designs, train people. And then kind of in between that time, there's 1 year where I did a project for Walmart where we created 8 cafes inside of Walmart in the Dallas area.
Wow.
So I did
Wow.
that for
That's
one
sick.
year. Yeah, so I did that for 1 year, traveled back and forth. My wife would joke that we were married on the weekends because I was there Monday through Friday. So I did that for a year and then came back to Copa Vida. And in 2020 is when I decided, after about 10 years of experience, that it was time for me to see fully what the other side looked like, being the boss, creating a company. And people say that, starting a business during the pandemic is not the best idea, which I agree in a lot of ways. But it also was good because it just gave me so much focus during that time to be able to just be home and just work on my business. And we first launched as a direct-to-consumer online business. And that's why if you like see our website, there's a lot of focus on that, just building a quiz, right? And my whole idea was Be Bright, and the name is actually from my wife, is we just wanted to create a company where coffee was excellent, but it was also simple and approachable. And so if you look at our website, our headers, like coffee should be simple. It's a delicious and vibrant and complex drink, but I think that we can deliver it in a simple way. And so one of the ways that we want to do that was first do the quiz. And so our main call to action throughout the website is we want you to take that quiz. Because when you answer that 5-question quiz, we're going to match you with a coffee that we think you'll like.
I think that's
So we're
cool.
trying to, yeah, we're just trying to shorten that gap of like what a coffee, what kind of coffee a customer wants and the actual coffee that they get. Because sometimes there's a huge gap.
Yeah.
They want
Yeah.
something chocolatey and nutty, and then they get a face melter. And that face melter might be good for someone like me, but then that's not what that customer wants, right?
Yeah.
And
So
Yeah.
we're just trying to minimize that gap. And so the quiz helps. The other thing that helps is the categories, right? The categories that we have are dark and bold, rich and smooth, bright and lively, unique and surprising. And those are four overarching categories that we feel like can capture a lot of different coffees that we can offer. And the names themselves are also very self-explanatory. It's not like a confusing name that needs further explanation. You kind of understand what those categories kind of will be like. So we spend a lot of time thinking about those different categories and those names. And we feel like with those four categories, wherever you are in your coffee journey, whether you add sugar, whether you add milk, whether you drink it dark, whether you like it just black, or whether you like bright and funky coffees, we feel like we have a coffee for you that you would like.
I think
That's
that's
how we
really
started,
cool,
yeah.
yeah. And something we preach in this podcast a lot is making coffee approachable. And I think that's something that that you did within, Be Bright. And that it doesn't have to be this complicated thing where you need to own, all these expensive tools that allow you to do everything that you could ever imagine. To someone getting into coffee, that's a lot. And I think approachability is really, really important. And also realizing like not being like, oh, you need this coffee, but like what, like the quiz is such a cool thing to make, like looking at bunch of bags of coffee like approachable and a little bit easy.
Exactly. I like it. I sometimes compare the experience of looking at a wall full of coffees or coffee bags as the experience I think most people have when they go to the wine aisle, right? Like when I go to the wine aisle, I look at the wall and I have no idea which wine to pick. And I think because we work in coffee, we assume when a customer looks at a wall of coffee or a retail wall, they're going to know how to navigate through that.
Yeah,
But
100%.
that's not always true. It's because we work and live in it, we breathe it, and so we know what a we have an idea of what a Newfield Pilsner tastes like. We have an idea of what a Brazil can taste like, but not all customers do. And so creating these categories gives them kind of like bumpers to kind of go through, right? And kind of exist in, and that way they can find what kind of coffee they like.
So with kind of all of those years of getting into coffee, were you always in the back of your head like, one day I'm going to open my own place? Or was there kind of just like a switch that flipped in 2020 to where you were like, I could do this myself?
I think the idea of owning my own coffee company, main actually primarily my own coffee shop, because that's all I knew really, it had always existed. I think it was always there. I think innately I'm very entrepreneurial. Like I've always wanted to be my own boss. I've always wanted to make good decisions, and I love the idea of that, because whether it's good or bad, you live with it. If you make a good decision for your company, you get credit for that. And on the flip side of that, you make a bad decision for the company, you're also responsible for that. And I love the accountability of those two things.
100%.
And I could live with that. You know what I mean? So
That's really cool.
that's something that I think always held on to. So the idea of opening my own coffee shop has always been in the back of my mind. It wasn't like 2020 specifically something spurred, but I think for me, I just felt like it was time. I had enough. I had an experience. I felt like it was just time for me in my career. My daughter was born in 2020, and I just wanted to, really put my own destiny in my own hands, I guess, in that sense, and bet on myself, and that's what I did in 2020.
That's awesome. Starting that company, was roasting your own, like creating a roasting program, always something that you wanted to do, or was there ever thoughts to be a multi-roaster or wholesale someone else's coffee?
So the sequence of our company was that we started as a roasting business, and then about 2 years later we opened a cafe. So we actually started with our own roasting coffee, a roasted coffee. When I was first considering the idea of leaving my previous company, it was always in the context of a coffee shop, because that's really what my background is opening coffee shops, training people, creating a coffee program. Even though our company, my previous company I worked for, Copa Vida, even though we roasted our own coffee, I was never in charge of roasting. I never did any day-to-day roasting. I might have roasted a few batches just to kind of learn a little bit, but creating a profile, learning how to do different charge temperatures, sourcing, and all that stuff, I really didn't know. I really didn't know how to do those things. And because it was in the middle of the pandemic, the idea of opening up a coffee shop, I had to throw that out the window. It was like, at the time, shops were closing, not opening. And so it really, for a second there, I almost felt this sense, like, not that I didn't love working on my previous company, but I felt trapped in a sense, because I want to move on, but the thing I know how to do is no longer viable. And so I had this moment of almost like a panic of like, man, I have to stay here in order to continue working, because my only viable option of, really doing what I do and do best is no longer viable. But I just kind of made this pivot in my mind. I was like, what if we just start a roofing? It's going to be low overhead. I don't need to buy a building or rent a building. I can just roast at a co-roasting facility. All I need is like some printed coffee bags, some mailer boxes, and a website, and we can go. And so when I started thinking about it that way, I was like, okay. And I didn't know how to roast coffee, but I just knew that I've always had a reverence for coffee and a love for coffee. But I knew that if I applied myself, I can research, I can learn it. That's what I did. So when I quit the company in July, and I opened in November, and in between that time, I learned how to make a website, I learned how to roast coffee, I learned how to start a roasting business, and I took a lot of classes and courses and studied and read. We opened our website in November, and so that's a lot of the reason why our website is very well thought out, is because I'm used to designing cafe spaces, and there's a lot of intention behind cafe spaces, the height of the bar, the distance between the tables, all these different things we think about, right? And I wanted the same kind of approach to our website. We want it to be approachable. We want it to be something that they can navigate through easily, find the kind of coffee we want. And so we spent a lot of time focusing on it. We launched in November.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
It's cool seeing your kind of transition from, starting and your dad's advice and, having a good work ethic being transferred throughout your entire career. I think that's something cool, hearing you talk about all of those things. And it's like none of this would have happened if, you had that drive that whole entire time of, learning how to roast coffee, learning how to build a website, learning, all of these steps throughout the whole journey is just really cool to hear. And I'm glad it's going well. It's awesome.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, that
Yeah.
also sounds like one heck of a journey too. And like it just you talking about designing a website, learning how to roast, like those are skills that some people spend their entire careers working on. Like there are people that just have careers in designing websites, and you were just like, oh, I'm just gonna do it. So that's awesome. So how did you go then from, well, actually, so you started competing in 2013.
Yep.
Yeah. So where in your coffee journey was that?
So 2013 was for my for the co coffee company I helped start, was one of the first employees at in Little Tokyo, LA, called Cafe Dolce. So I competed on behalf of Cafe Dolce my first year, really not knowing anything, but just having watched videos of it, and I just was like, I'm also a very competitive person, so I've always wanted to push myself and see how I do against the best in the country. And back then, 2013 was really the height. One of the periods of recent competitions where like these events were big. Like I'm talking like we had six barista competitions throughout the country, and we divided it by the west side, the west coast. We called it the central coast, and then the east coast. It was all, and we would have two different competitions in each coast, right? So we had the big west, it would be the southwest, the northwest, then we would have the north central, south central, and then northeast and southeast. And these competitions were big. I'm talking like 40, 60 competitors at each one.
Wow.
And
Yeah.
so it was very daunting at the time to like throw your name in there and
Yeah.
try to, compete. And back, now it's like there's these qualifier events, it's 10 minutes. So back then, those the qualifier events, they were all 15 minutes. You did your full routine.
Wow.
You did your whole thing. And so
Yeah.
I remember my first competition, I practiced, I created a drink. I practiced, I probably got to do the routine four times. six times in front of people or on my own. And I went up on stage and I forgot almost all of my lines. My mouth was so dry, I couldn't even speak. And it was a nightmare. But
Wow.
I did it, and I was proud of the fact that I got to do it. And during that time, even though I didn't qualify for nationals, you could still apply, and if there weren't enough competitors, you can go to nationals and compete. And so I did. I applied, and I got to go to nationals in Boston that year, and I competed. And that was an amazing experience. Back then we had some really heavy hitters like Pete Licata, Sam Lewington, Paul Kubinski, just a lot of big names now
Yeah,
that
wow.
were competing at the time. And I was just a baby barista. There's like videos of it actually still out there, but I still have pimples on my face. And yeah, it was just like a when I was like an adolescent barista. It was fun. It was fun, and I learned a lot. And then the next year, in 2014, kind of taking the things that I learned from the previous year, I really put in a lot of work. And this was now with my new company, Pulpavita. And so there was a lot of just kind of a lot more pride. Like we wrote, it's our own roasted coffee. Let's put our brand out there. And I got to partner with the roaster at the time, Clancy Kramer, and we put this theme together on the idea of time, and the idea of time and the importance of time and how it affects every chain in the coffee, every step of the coffee chain. And it was one of those routines, and I practiced a lot in front of people. I practiced probably way more, like 10 times more than I did in the previous competition, just so I would be a little bit more ready. I remember competing in the Southwest at the time, and I still had some dryness in my mouth. Like that didn't go away, but I felt much more composed and ready for the moment. It happened to be in LA at the time too, so it felt like I had a little bit of a home court advantage. And I remember giving to the team. It was just one of those things, magical moments where like, it was a theme about time, and I was putting the drinks down, saying my last part of the speech, and then it was I can tell because back then we had clocks that you can visibly see with the timer. Nowadays we don't have that, but back then you could see it, so the audience as they're watching could see how long you're going, and it was just counting down, and it was 14:59, and then as it turned from 14:59 into 15 minutes, I called time. And so it was like this culmination of like the theme being about time and calling it right on time, and it was a really awesome routine
Sounds
that
insane.
I'm still very proud of. And I managed to place third in the Southwest that year, and this is like only behind Charles Dubinsky and Eden Marie at the time, who worked for Intelligentsia. So we're talking about established, barista competitors and
Babinski is a
established
huge
career
name.
baristas. Yes. So to be third was like a huge deal for me, and really kind of gave me a lot of confidence that in my second year of competing, I can accomplish this goal. So that was really fun, and got to nationals that year. It was in Seattle. I think we did a few things differently. We changed the coffee that year, going from the qualifiers to the nationals. And in hindsight, I wish that maybe we did it, just because we added, instead of using one coffee for the routine, I used two different coffees, and so that changed things a little bit for us. So, and then at the nationals that year, I just didn't place anywhere. I didn't even move on to day two. So it was just one of those things where I was like, man, I gotta figure out what I need to do to do better, because it sucks putting this much time in and not moving on. And it just so happens that it ended up being 9 years for the next time I could compete. And it wasn't by design, you know. It wasn't like, oh, I'm gonna take 9 years and like really work on my next routine. It was just life happened. Our cafe got busy. We opened up more cafes. It just wasn't a priority for us as a company for me to compete. And you know, I there were, in the beginning when I immediately finished competing, I would kind of pay attention to what was happening, but over time, it just was to me too painful to like stay in touch with it, because like I felt a lot of FOMO. Like if I'd stay close to it, I
I
feel
feel
like
that. Yeah.
I'd want to just go in. And
Yeah.
so I just stopped paying attention. And then it wasn't until we started our own business, Be Right Coffee, that I decided to compete again. And I think if I'm gonna put in that time, it might as well be for my own company.
Right.
And the first year I the competitions opened up again was 2021. Oh, no, sorry, 2022. It was 2022, and they did a lottery system, and I just didn't get picked. And so I couldn't compete the first time available. But in 2023, I applied and got in and put a ton of time into it. You know, after taking 9 years off, you have to relearn a lot of the rules and kind of catch up to what the judges are looking for. And so that was a lot of, you know, a challenging thing. And so, you know, even the score sheets changed significantly from when I competed first until now. So just relearning that. And then at the regionals in the last year, I believe it was in Denver, I competed. I think I ended up getting like 14th in the regionals or the qualifiers, and so that was good enough for me to move on. And last year I talked about the idea of transformation and how coffee is transformative. And then at nationals, I just we worked on the script a little bit more, added the milk course, and we just really dialed it in, worked on it, just put in. I think we did the run through, we did a run through 50 times, just back to back to back at night. And you know, it took a lot of sacrifice because we the business didn't stop, so we would have to only practice after we closed the shop. And that meant also my daughter was being watched by my parents, so it was just a lot of sacrifice. And after putting that time in and getting the routine to a space where I felt like I could do it no matter where you put me, we were ready for Portland. And but somehow got sixth in the country, and that was really exciting because like I had never gotten to that point before in the national stage. And so in a lot of ways last year was like more exciting for me. It was like every time we moved on, it was like this like, oh, like, oh my gosh, we moved on. Like we were reaching like, you know, unoccupied air. Like we've never been to this, you know, this height before. So it was a lot more exciting in that sense because it was all fresh and new. And so yeah, that was last year. And then after last year competing, just after a season of training, my immediate response to my wife kind of flying back to LA was, I don't think I'm gonna do that again. It's just like I don't know how much more work I can put in and how much more I can move up in placing. Because to me, if I put in the same amount of work or maybe even more, and I got all the way up to second place, even moving up from sixth to second with the same amount of work I had just put in to get there wasn't worth it for me. Because really the benefit it brings to your company and the awareness it brings to you and your brand really happens when you get to the top, when you hit first place. And for me, second place wasn't gonna even cut it. And so I instead of putting my mind towards first place or bust, I just said, let's just sixth place is good. Like let's run with that. Let's be done with it. And I'm the fight back. My wife is like, honestly, Frank, you should do it one more time. Like look at after 9 years off, look at what you did. You got sixth place. Just build off of the momentum. And Worlds next year is going to be in Korea. Like how cool would it be if you as a, because I'm Korean American, how cool would it be you representing America in Korea? And I was like, all right, let's do it.
That's yeah, that's cool. I just got like goosebumps when you said that. That's awesome. That's so cool.
We decided to do it one more year, and this year, really the mentality was first or bust, just first or bust. So I put a lot of thought into my theme, what coffee I was going to use, and I used the first coffee I used in the qualifiers this year for, where was it this year? It was in Houston. The qualifiers in Houston this year. I used a coffee from Costa Rica from La Lajas, and I was really excited to use this coffee because it was the same coffee producers I used from my most recent from 2014. And so to see their kind of growth in the kind of coffees that they were producing, and
Right.
then my growth as a barista, I thought that was a really cool experience.
It's a
And
full
so I
circle
put so
moment.
much time. Yeah, it is. I just put so much time and energy into this new routine, and I put the time in, and we were ready. We went to Houston, we competed, and I think I got 13th place. And so I was so like so down on myself because I had just reached top six last year, and my goal was to get first this year. And so going to Houston and then getting 13th was like a huge letdown. And I was like, man, this is not going the way I had expected. I wasn't expecting to get first in the qualifiers, but I was expecting to do well. And so after the qualifiers were done, I reached out to a friend of mine, now who's a friend of mine. His name is Juan Diaz, and he had placed third last year. And he has a company called third overall in the country. And he has a company called Nowhere Coffee, and he imports and sources coffees from Colombia. And we connected really for the first time at Houston this year, because when he was in Portland, he was in like game mode, like Mamba mentality. Don't talk to me. I'm
Yeah.
not your friend. I'm here to kick your butt, kind
Wow.
of mentality. So we never even really talked, even though we were top six. And it wasn't until we got to Houston, he wasn't competing this year, so his guards were down. He was just a different person, and we talked about competing, and we talked about the coffees that we can get. And he was like, "What's your goal this year?" And I said, "My goal is to win it all." And he said, "Okay." And he went to work, sent me two coffees, and we found and I cut the coffee. One of the coffees called Ombligon from Colombia. And when I tasted that coffee, I knew this is the coffee that was gonna make me help me win. And it
Yeah.
was just like this insane candy fruit gummy bear sweetness that I had never tasted in any other coffee. And that's when I knew that I could finally do some damage with the coffee I'm bringing to the stage. And so it's like, I use this illustration, but it's like, in the past, I was bringing BB guns to a gunfight, and now I was actually bringing actual guns to a gunfight. I can defend
Right.
myself and do well. And so, using the Omnigun, refining the script, putting a lot of work into it, I felt a lot more confident. And each day was just such an amazing experience. The one big change that I also made this year was changing my coach. I actually hired a coach by the name of Jamie Lau, who is a huge coffee professional here in LA. And just being able to work with her this year was an amazing experience and really helped bring a lot of structure and organization to our routine this year. And we managed to win.
Yeah,
Nice.
awesome.
Well,
Well,
congratulations.
yeah, congrats on that. And then
Thank you. Thank you.
before we go any further, I just want to real quick circle back. I just don't want anybody to be lost or confused while listening to this. I think there are some people probably listening right now that like what is a barista competition, right? So we would love to hear you explain what a barista competition even is.
I think the way that I've been describing it is a 15-minute long coffee presentation in the style of a TED Talk, where you're making three drinks. You're making an espresso, a cappuccino, or a milk course beverage, and a signature beverage. And you're giving usually a theme to your presentation, and you're serving these three drinks to four judges. All the while, you have two technical judges that are following you and checking every step of your motion and making sure you're tamping correctly, you're not wasting coffee grinds on the table, keeping your stations clean and organized. And then you have a head judge that kind of brings it all together. And you have 15 minutes to do this, and any second over 15 minutes is a point deducted. And oftentimes, the top six placing is decided within 5 points. So it's every point really counts.
Wow.
Yeah, so really it is the gold standard of coffee every year. These people going in and they have worked their whole life to for this moment. I think the pressure in that must be insane.
It is. It's part of it's like the self pressure, right? Like you put the pressure on yourself to perform well. But it's also just like performing in front of judges, right? Like performing in front of a room full of people who are watching you. Most of us, even seasoned competitors, we still get shakes like involuntarily. Like we can't control our hands. Like the stakes are so high, right? Like imagine preparing 100 hours for something that you do in 15 minutes. Like that it all comes down to these 15 minutes. Like that pressure really affects you, physically. And so, like your hands start shaking, your mouth gets dry, you forget your script, even though you memorized all of it. Just like so many things out of your control start to happen. So, yeah, a lot of pressure.
What do you, and I know this is kind of like a weird question, but like what drives you to compete? Like what do you enjoy about doing the barista competition?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's a multifaceted question, answer. And also, I think it's an answer that's changed over the years for me. I think in the beginning, a lot of it was like, just establishing myself in the beginning years. It was like, I want people to know I can do this. Like, I can hang with the best. And it also, at the time, there weren't a lot of Asian Americans and even Korean Americans at the time competing in these things, right? So, even for representation's sake, I wanted to let people know, like, us as Asian Americans, we can do this too. We can bring excellence to our craft. And so, a big part of that was my motivation in the beginning. I think now, especially this last 2 years, for me, a big motivation. It wasn't necessarily for myself as like a barista. I feel for the most part pretty comfortable in my stand in that sense. Like, I don't need to prove anything to anyone. But I think for me, it was more about helping put our brand on the map. And there's nothing quite like a brief competition to help bring awareness to your coffee brand. And if you think about the likes of, early on, Intelligentsia, a lot of their name recognition was a lot of it was through competition. If you look at the modern day example of that, that would be Honest, right? Andrea Allen, she started to compete after I left, or maybe a little bit before, just kind of during that time. And then, in the time that I stopped competing until I started competing, like Onyx became a powerhouse. And
Yeah.
a lot of that is through competition. And so for me, I've always known that competition is a very big way to bring awareness to your brand. And for me, as a company that's fully owned and funded by myself and my family, I knew it was actually also one of the least cost or one of the most cost-effective ways to get our brand out there. And so it's a cost-effective way to get your brand out there, but it's very hard to do. It's very hard to do well and to win it. So it there is there are risks involved, right? Like
100%,
for
yeah.
me, placing sixth last year was cool, but it really didn't impact our business that much. Like, we didn't see a tick in sales. It wasn't like this huge ordeal. There wasn't these write-ups, but really winning first is when you get to see that result, right? Like our cafe right now, we're about 50% busier than we were before I won. And so I love that because it's not just about me, it's about my employees. You know, the saying of like, rising tides rises all boats, right? Like we all rise when the tides rise. And so with my employees,
Yeah.
they're getting to ride this wave too and see reaping the benefits of it. And I love that. And it's a huge motivator for me for sure. And I'm just glad that it all paid off,
Yeah,
you
100%. Yeah.
know?
So what I'm curious on, like, what's your mindset going into a competition and preparing for a competition? Are you, is it, 'cause I like the buildup has to be insane, and like continuing to train and continuing to do the same thing over and over again every single day, and to like wonder, is this going to be good enough? Or, I'm just curious on like what was going through your heads, maybe like a thing that you were struggling with during that process. Would be awesome to hear, because it has to be brutal.
Yeah, it, I mean, my competition journey season ended this year in May, and it started in October of last year. And so that's 7 months of your life where almost every day you're thinking about it. And so it started in October. It first started with the ideation of a screen. To me, that's what always motivates me to write a routine out is a theme. The theme to me is kind of like a catalyst that kind of brings everything together. And I was wrestling with a few ideas this year. One actually early on was a theme called "punmat," which is a Korean word, which like the literal translation would be "taste of the hand," and it's commonly tied to like Korean moms. And like how they have this special ability to make the food taste better because of their sunmat, the taste of their hand. And it's irreplaceable because like, you give me the same recipe and I make it won't taste the same. And it's because she just has that extra touch, and the love and the care. And I love the idea. And I was thinking about how we can apply that to, the coffee chain, like how, like baristas, we care. It's different because we care about each little step. And the same thing with producers and the same thing with roasters. I felt like there was a tie there. And then the other thing that I ended up going with was with kodawari, which is a Japanese word that means, that loosely translates to the relentless pursuit of perfection. And at the core of that idea is this idea that perfection is not a destination. Perfection is not attainable, but it's aspirational. That it's the idea of reaching perfection, and actually, what you end up finding out is that perfection is found in the journey. And so, I just love that word, and there is no real other translation for it. And so, I thought it would be a really good theme for a routine. And so that's where it started. And then, so I actually wrote two full scripts with one with Sonma and one with Kodawari, and I found my The one with the Kodawari was a much longer page. I just kept writing and writing and writing. And I was like, I'm going with Kodawari. So, that in October started, reached out to my coach this year, and she had agreed to join the team. And then from there, you source coffees. I know there are some people who go the other way around where they choose a coffee first and then come up with a thing. I tend to always go theme first and then coffee second. And this year when I was we just cupped a bunch of different samples, tasted them, chose it, bought it, got it shipped here, roasted it again. And so there's this, like this just there's these steps that take months. So if you even though a month out before competition, if you don't have your coffee in, you end up finding yourself being delayed, right? So because you want to know your coffee intimately, you want to know what it tastes like when it's aged at the time the competition is going to be, 10 days off roast, 14 days off roast. You want to know all those things so that there's no surprises. And so I think the competition happened in January, in qualifiers this year in Houston. And so I wanted to, starting in October kind of gave me a good window. And, at the same time, we're still running our business. We're still running our cafe, running wholesale, running our online e-commerce. And we also do a pop-up on Sundays, every Sunday. So it's just, for me at the time was like no days off. And so, and then after January, after competing at the qualifiers, I took about a month off, maybe 3 weeks off, and then went back to planning for my adding the milk course section of it. And then from there, from March on, was just go, go, go. Yeah. It was just practice after practice, tasting. One of the cool things that was a lot different this year from last year was we invited the LA coffee community to be a part of it. And so we brought in a lot of LA coffee baristas to come in, taste with us, share their notes, share their feedback, and then just build
That's
on it.
awesome.
And so I think in a lot
That
of
is
ways,
awesome,
that's,
yeah.
I think the LA, yeah, it felt like a LA win because all of us were involved in it. So that was pretty cool. And that's a big credit to my coach, Jordan, for sure.
With choosing that coffee specifically, like, can you explain that process a little bit? I'm sure, like, choosing one coffee that, in a way that it's representing you, but you're also representing the coffee and presenting it. So, what kind of goes through choosing the coffee that you're going to compete with?
I think it's what the first thing is for me when I'm choosing a competition coffee is on a cupping table, it has to stand out. It has to stand out. It has to be something that I'm drawn to. And it's got to be a coffee that is just memorable. What we're also looking for is we're looking for very discernible flavor quality. Coffees that, it can be complex, but along with complexity, it needs to be structured. It needs to be consistent. It needs to be something that the flavor calls, you say it, and people will say, yes, I taste that. That's just really important nowadays when it comes to competition. The accuracy of flavor calls is a huge part of it. So that's something that I keep in mind when I'm competing, is I want to make sure these flavors are discernible and they're clear. I also you also want there you also don't want to choose a coffee that has too much funkiness, right? Like there's right now, so there's so much processing methods that add so much funk to your coffee, and it could be good, but you also kind of want to be mindful of it because you don't want a coffee that's going to stand out in the wrong way. So you want it to stand out in for the right reasons, and so we kind of look out for that. We tend to like funky coffees because they stand out. But we also want to make sure it's like a funky, but also structured and clean, So those are the things that I look for. And then secondly, once we know what that coffee is, finding if there's a story behind it that can match my theme. And it just really worked out this year with Nestor Lasso. Like he's an amazing producer. He's only 25, 26 years old. And just like being able to read about him. And then eventually meeting him in Colombia and visiting him, and then becoming friends.
Wow.
I think
That is
all stuff
awesome.
like that is just so amazing. It's like it's cool that coffee can do that. It can unite people like us. Someone who lives in Colombia doesn't speak English, and someone who lives in LA and doesn't speak that much Spanish, that we can be friends because of coffee. That's really cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Going, I guess, like, what was your process? I guess you explained it a little bit in like roasting the coffee, because you said that you tasted it when it came from your like sourcing company that you're working with. And how did you go about replicating that, or also enhancing what you were tasting?
Yeah, so the coffees were sent as greens. I roasted it on the Ikawa sample roaster. I kind of have like a go-to, just simple, simple profile I use. And when you use a profile and you use it consistently, you kind of it stops being a variable until you could taste the coffee itself. And I just knew like some of these characteristics that I wanted to bring out. And so one of the other things that really changed for me this year was roasting on a different machine. I roast on a 35 kilo Loring roaster. And so my minimum batch that I can roast on that roaster is 16 pounds. And I'm competing with a coffee in that this year that was more expensive than any coffee I've ever bought. And so for me
Right.
to
No
roast
pressure.
15 pounds,
Yeah.
yeah,
No
exactly. It's like
pressure.
15 pounds at one go was just too much of a risk for me. Like,
Right.
as much as I take risks, I'm also very risk averse. And so I just couldn't live with throwing in 15 pounds of this, right? It's like, that's like $450 in 15 minutes you're spending, you know? So it's like, that was a bit scary. And so one of the things that really unlocked winning this year for me was roasting on the Stronghold, which is a roasting machine that's a fluid bed roaster, three different applications of heat: conduction, convection, and radiant heat. And
Wow.
then lastly, it's 500 gram batches. And so instead of doing 15 pounds or 16 pounds, I'm doing
Right.
500 grams. I could live with that. If I messed up a batch, I could live with that. You know what I mean? So, and you know, honestly, when you're at competition, you don't need 20, 50 pounds. You only really
Oh, yeah.
need like 10 pounds. 10 pounds will last you every stage, every round. Practice, competition, the actual competitions, and each round after that, if you get to the finals. So, you know, I think roasting on the Stronghold was also a new learning experience. I had to learn how to use it, but I also tapped into some of the resources, like my friend who competed at the U.S. roast competition this year. His name is Mark Ko. He's from Kona, Hawaii, and he competed in the roasters competition, and they roast on the Stronghold. And so he shared his approach, his profile, and I also tried many different approaches. His tasted the best, and so just built on it, changed a few things, and you taste it 1 week. You kind of figure out where you want to take it, and then you make the adjustments. And for me, luckily, we made two adjustments to the profile, and we were locked in. So.
That's really cool to see. Yeah, I enjoy seeing, like innovations like that style of roasting coming into the coffee scene. It's just cool to see more people like being more diverse and kind of like roasting profiles and things like that. It's cool to see. Transitioning towards the end of this episode, I want to get your take on, you've been talking about like opening up cafes and training. I would love to hear your kind of perspective on bringing people into coffee and kind of sparking that fire for new baristas or new people that are interested in coffee, because this is something that I think we try to focus on, is like how we can introduce more people into specialty coffee and don't not gatekeep or not just throw all of, like make it a approachable in a way, I guess. But yeah, I would love to kind of hear your perspective on that and maybe your own like philosophy on how to introduce more people into this like passion of coffee that we have.
I think, yeah, I think, you know, one of our taglines is "Your coffee, your journey." And the idea behind that is all of us in the industry, we have, or all of us who drink coffee, we are at a certain point in our journey with coffees. And I think for us as coffee professionals, our job isn't to talk to them or share coffee with them with certain expectations, meaning like we shouldn't lead with someone, let's say someone who's just getting into coffee. We shouldn't introduce them to coffees that are like super funky or talk to them about these anaerobic processing or co-ferments. Like, it just, everything flies over their head. And so, and it intimidates them. I think for me, my approach has always been to see where customers are or where that person is. meet them at their journey and take them on the journey. And so be where they are and let's figure out where you want to go, and let's kind of introduce these coffees that you might like. And some people, they never change, you know, they stay within a certain flavor profile, and that's okay, because coffee for me, I think, is a very personal thing, very personal and very ritualistic. And you know, I think our job is to honor that and not to be like, you're drinking that, that's not good, you know, kind of
Yeah,
like that kind of uppity attitude. I've always
100%,
hated that,
100%.
and I've experienced it on my end. And so I've always felt like our job is to meet them at their journey, meet them where they are, and take them on a journey, and share coffees with them that, you know, they'll like.
I
That's kind
love
of been
that.
my
Yeah.
philosophy.
Yeah, that's awesome. I feel like all the time, like the language that we use with specialty coffee is often like we should push people into specialty coffee. And I like how you just talk like that's just not your approach. Like if they want to jump in, let them jump in on their own time. So that's really awesome. You guys have, I mean, just by looking at the website, looking at your branding and then speaking with you, you guys have done a really great job with approachability, and that's just something that we value a lot. And then just being able to maintain that gets really hard, especially when you're the US Barista Champion, you know, like how I feel like a lot of people would take that and try to turn their company around into this, like, oh, we're only going to drink co-ferments here, you know? So that it's really awesome that you guys have stayed true to your values and your mission. So we really appreciate that.
Yeah, I
And
mean, I'm
yeah,
to that point. It is tempting, you know. It's like I do find myself in a little bit of like an imposter syndrome, like kind of like, oh, but we don't do these like crazy fermented coffees and all the coffees that the cool kids drink, and coffees that frankly I enjoy too.
yeah.
But you know, I think the important thing is to remember what we're here for, at least for our company, to remember our statement, our mission statement, and just really focus on what we're doing well. And you know, and there's going to be room for really funky and cool coffees, but it's not going to be the main thing we do.
100%.
Right.
And then a
Yeah.
question that we kind of ask a lot of people is, where would you like to see the industry go in these next couple of years?
I've been thinking about that a bit, and I think a part of for me is I think I want to see more opportunities for career baristas. I think I don't have the answer for that. I don't know what that would look like, but being able to see our industry grow in a way where like baristas can actually like that could be a career, and not just like, oh, let me be a barista first, and then I'll become a manager, and then I'll become a roaster, and then I'll become a green buyer. And then it's like, you know, the higher you go up, just there's less opportunity. But what if we can embrace the idea of a career barista, where you can just be a barista and serve coffee and make a good living? I think that's I and I don't know the answers. So I don't have the answers for that. I don't know what that looks like, but that is something that I am interested in, something that I'm looking into for me, for my own company. So, yeah.
I think that's a cool take, and I
Yeah,
think
that's awesome.
a lot of people, when they think about the future of this industry, they focus on more of the coffee and growing side, which absolutely needs to be a focus, but no one really talks about the cafe experience. And so that's something that is cool to bring into light, because I feel like a lot of the times the baristas are overlooked. And so
Yeah,
it would.
baristas are often viewed as pawns, you know. It's like they're very invaluable, but you know, it's like I think a good barista possesses some of the most amazing skills in hospitality, like being able to help customers pick up on social cues, dial in a coffee, understand humidity and the weather and how that changes my coffee, steam milk perfectly, make latte art without any, you know, any like create really good contrast latte art. Like all those things, like how many people can do that and get paid what they get paid, you know? So it's like I think baristas are a very important position I think also baristas make the best coffee professionals. Whether you become a green buyer, whether you become a CEO, I think a barista, if you work in the coffee business, I think a barista makes you the best whatever you'll ever become.
I think it's
Yeah.
cool because baristas see pretty much all the steps that go into most coffee businesses.
Yeah.
And I think something that is cool for the baristas at least is like being those the point of service and being the end of the supply chain. Like you can, you are that final seal of everything that started from the seed. And so, making sure that you do your job and, a good barista does all of those things and is
Yeah.
intentional and creates that experience. And it is unfortunate when that gets overlooked.
Yeah. Like if you work in the coffee industry and you've never done a back-to-back closing and opening shift, like don't talk to me, bro.
Yeah. We are not the same. We are not the same.
We're
Yeah. Yeah,
That's
it's
awesome.
also because,
Yeah.
like, Ian, going back to what you were saying, like, how many jobs do you get to be a teacher, a scientist, and then also get the joy of serving people this beautiful thing? Like, it's such a cool thing for baristas, and it's hard, like, when you have the people that come in and they're just
Yeah,
mean to you and
you're missing a lot more. You're missing artists,
Yeah,
psychiatrists,
artists. Yes. Yes,
psychiatrists,
psychiatrist. Yes, your emotional
plumber.
punching bag. Plumber.
Yeah, plumber. That's a lot. 100%.
We yeah, we're it's a
Yeah, there's a
multifaceted whole
skill set.
100%.
It's yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right,
Yeah,
well,
that's something we have a whole episode on just the role of the barista, and it's so hard to narrow it down because there's so many roles that we play into. So yeah, for
thank
sure.
you so much for being on this podcast. It's
Yeah.
been truly amazing to hear your story. And for me, I didn't do as much research as Caleb, and so hearing you talk about your story and your morals and who you are as a person, it's been really cool to see how transparent that is throughout your entire journey. I think it's very genuine and inspiring for, I think I can speak for me and Caleb. And holding ourselves accountable as getting into this industry, and I think like something to strive for and having that work and that fire, is something really cool to hear you talk about. And yeah, I just want to thank you for being on here,
Yeah, thank you.
and talking
I
and
have a
walking
question
us through
for
that.
you guys. Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. I have a question, though. Are you guys ever considering competing?
I think
Yeah. Yeah.
I think both of us
I
Would like to.
yeah, I
Awesome.
one thing that I've loved about watching competition, I'm just a huge like barista competition nerd, is I went to school for theater, and so like watching all of the different elements of theater that are in competition makes it really exciting for me to watch, because it goes back. I mean, script writing, it's a performance. You're rehearsing over and over and over again for you to put it in front of these people, and you have no idea what they're going to take out of it. Like, you could think you have a perfect routine, just like you think you have an amazing show, and whoever watches it, they can think the total opposite. It's all subjective. So it's like that's very exciting for me, and I just love performance. And I told I there was one day I told, I think it was after last year's Worlds, I was sitting watching with my partner Lily. I was watching it with her, and she was like, so this is insane. And I looked at her and I was like, yeah, by 2027 I want to compete. And like that was my response, and she was like okay. I was like yeah, that'd be cool. But yeah, we're just huge nerds, so I think
I
it'd be
say
really
I
cool.
my 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 push is always just go for it.
I think,
Just go yeah,
for it.
it's something
There's
that
never a
you
point when you're ready.
can.
You really only get to experience it when you feel it, and then
Yeah.
from there you get better from there. You know, like
Right.
I think the journey starts the moment you go for it.
Heard.
So
Well,
my
thank you.
encouragement to you guys is, go for it.
Well, thank
And
you. Yeah.
I
And
want to
one
see
last
you guys
awesome.
this year.
All right,
Yeah.
we'll
All
see about that.
right, we'll get on that. Yeah. Yeah.
One last thing, one last thing, and then we will end here. What's next for Frank Law and Be Bright Coffee?
Nothing imminent, but just kind of taking advantage of our just the recent kind of wave of exposure we've gotten to help build our brand, increase wholesale, increase our e-commerce, possibly open more cafes. Those are things that we're looking into, and then something that's actually coming up that's tangible is we're doing a tasting here in LA at the cafe of our competition.
That's
And
so
so you
cool.
can sign up
Awesome.
on our sign up on our Instagram. We're gonna have a link to it. You can come sit down, taste the coffees that we competed that I competed with, all the drinks. We're adding a pour over and a cold brew to it, just so we
Nice.
can kind of experience the full spectrum. But you get to taste the exact same coffee, exact same milk, and the signature beverage. And we're selling tickets to that starting soon.
That'll be awesome.
All
That'll
right.
be super
Well, thank
cool.
you so much for
Yeah.
doing this. This is an insane conversation. So it was
Awesome.
great
Thank you,
talking with you.
guys.
Great meeting you. And yeah, guys, if you're in the LA area, check out Be Bright Coffee. And if you're not, go on their website, take the quiz, find what coffee is right for you, and then explore their whole menu. It's very diverse and it's a cool place. So Frank, thank you so much. This has been awesome. So
Thank you. Thank you, Caleb. Thank you, Lewis, for
Yeah,
having me. It
appreciate you.
was a pleasure.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
We'll see you guys. That's it.
See you.